Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
May 3rd, 2021. Good evening and welcome to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network. We think, maybe, possibly. I heard that we're going to get work back into the schedule, Tony.
I don't really pay attention to that.
Well, I mean, it would be nice to actually be in the schedule, given the fact that we've been doing the show again now for about a month, and not a damn one of them has made the website. Just saying. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. The voice you just heard is the DSDO. He is down since day one. He is Tony Acero.
Yo.
And I guess happy belated anniversary, Tony.
Yeah, I got you something.
Not those Ohio State sneakers, is it?
No.
That's a callback, folks. But, Speaking of things that are kind of retro, I'm going to actually lead off the show with this because I finally showed up for it. Hey, Tony, where can people read your stuff?
Twitter, 411mania.com.
Yes, where?
A place where, you know, there's a new column that has debuted recently.
Well, it didn't so much debut as return.
Yeah, re-debut.
It was a relaunch, like something else from Raw tonight we'll talk about later that I'm sure you're probably going to want to blow a gasket about.
Oh, man.
Does Lana automatically become better, in your opinion?
Oh, well, I mean, let's see, you know?
We'll get to Raw here in a few moments. But what column is that you're referring to that has returned to 411 Mania?
The magnificent return of the three R's.
Go ahead and expand.
I mean, it's very simple, you know. You watch the show, you say what's right, what's wrong, and what's ridiculous about it. And since there's some things that we just are unsure of or we're not fully aware of where they're going with yet, Larry made a section called Purgatory, where essentially it's like, you know, it's not bad, it's not good, has potential. And that's basically what goes there. And since I don't want to do all the work and I can't possibly watch nearly as much wrestling as Larry did, I do the show that I already cover because it's easy. I assembled some Avengers, if you will, to cover other shows. And one of those people happened to be you.
Indeed. My debut column at 411 Mania for the three R's, NXT from last Wednesday, which just so happened to be our seven-year anniversary, ironically enough, Tony.
Nice.
My first version of the three R's is up there with yours and Michael Ornelas' take on last week's AEW Dynamite. Unfortunately, Robert Winfrey, who would normally do SmackDown, was out of town for his father's wedding.
Correct. Yes. So week off. And that'll happen. I mean, unless I get coverage, but realistically, I want to keep it with the same people so we get a little bit of consistency. So there'll be occasions where, you know, Harry might not be able to cover NXT, and I would rather not find a replacement. I'd rather, keep the readers with the same voice for a while. And then maybe, you know, if with time permits, we could do a switcheroo and just see how we view the other shows as a one-off or as a couple weeks, you know. I have plans. I have some plans in the future.
The irony of Robert missing this week's three R's for SmackDown is that SmackDown, in my opinion, was actually a damn good show. So what do you say we go ahead and segue right from our plug for the three R's right into our coverage of this week's episode of Friday Night SmackDown?
Let's do it.
All right. The term is thrown around ridiculously loosely anymore. The term match of the year. You see one at every independent promotion, or at least every independent promotion wants you to think so. You see one on pretty much every pay-per-view, or at least every pay-per-view wants you to think so. Tony, legitimately, Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan from SmackDown this past Friday is the best match I've watched this year.
Well, this calendar year or this wrestling year? I mean, Randy Orton and Edge had the greatest match of all time.
Yeah, but that was like last June. Okay, so there's that whole calendar year gimmick thing here. Not to mention, I know you were really biased towards the Sasha and Bianca match from WrestleMania Night 1.
Right, the real greatest match of all time. Yep.
Anyways, back to what I was saying, though, with regards to Roman and Bryan there. First, I want to talk about the genius that is Paul Heyman, because I don't know how much of that episode of SmackDown you did or didn't get to catch to watch. I know your schedule doesn't always allow for you to fully view SmackDown or anything there. But Paul Heyman's promo was fucking fantastic.
What did you like about it, Harry?
My favorite part about it is the fact that he took Daniel Bryan's phrase and he spun it into working it throughout his entire promo. He built Bryan up through the entirety of the promo, only to say that all of that's not going to be good enough for Bryan to stop the Universal Champion Roman Reigns. Using the yes, yes, yeses. Using the yes, yes, yeses. And then ending with a no, no, no. If he may have another volley, sir. Dare I say, when he is properly motivated, Paul Heyman is still the best promo in professional wrestling?
Well, I mean, I think he just gets public speaking. He gets the manipulation of language. He gets cadence, delivery, repetition. He still sells as well. Because, you know, I forgot where I saw it, but maybe I didn't see it. Maybe I just noticed it. But it's very, very, it's almost mandatory that you mention the date and the event of whatever match you're selling. And Heyman did that expertly every single time.
I think they did a fantastic job of building up this match throughout the course of the show as well, with them going through all the highlights of the various Legends picks and stuff and going through like the current roster. Not only that, they also set the stage for things going forward with those picks as well, because you saw Shinsuke call out Roman Reigns. You saw Seth kind of picked Daniel Bryan to win, which could set him up for something for Roman down the road, in addition to issuing the challenge for Cesaro for next week. You saw Cesaro accept Seth's challenge, as well as laying the groundwork of potentially, if we do see Bryan return on any of the brands there, maybe Cesaro could be a guy that Bryan could work one last time.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, my only issue with this, because I had no issue at all with the way that they built it throughout the show. I had no issue at all with Heyman's promo. And like I said, I do think it's the best match I've seen at least on WWE television this year, and probably throughout the entirety of wrestling that I've watched for the year. My only issue for this match is I think they should have given it more time to marinate.
The old O'Dowd.
Do you think that if they would have given this another week or two in order to slow burn, that we would have maybe built up the anticipation levels even higher? Or do you think that this was the right time and the right opportunity to cash in on the Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan circumstance?
No, I think that they're building that entire thing just fine. And, it shot the viewership up from what I read.
It was definitely wise to announce it at the tail end of last week's SmackDown, because heavyweight title matches aren't something you get on free TV on a regular basis anymore, which is in stark contrast to the reign of the Attitude Era, where titles were being defended on television constantly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's also talk about the other title match from this week's SmackDown here. Let's talk about Big E and Apollo Crews. Big E picks up a disqualification win when Commander Aziz gets involved following the big ending. Post-match, the save is made by Kevin Owens, and then Owens is taken out by Sami Zayn. Zane and Apollo celebrate, or more specifically, Sammy goes to celebrate with Apollo Crews, and Aziz lays out Sammy as Apollo stands tall. Two-part question. One, are you okay with the disqualification finish here to protect Big E?
Well, yeah, I am. I also think that they're trying to bring new people into the fold around the belt. So they're doing the exact opposite of Raw.
Which actually brings me to the second part of my question. Do you think it's a fatal four-way for the U.S. title at Backlash? Or excuse me, for the Intercontinental title. My mistake.
Yeah. I don't really know whether I can predict that happening or not, but if it did, I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah, I think the ability to almost so I don't want to say flawlessly, because in some ways it came off a little clunky, but to intermittently weave the two storylines together in order to take us to a four-way for the IC title, it doesn't bother me. And I think it also helps the fact that it's four guys that we know can go inside of the ring. So if we do end up getting a four-way out of it, the match itself should be really good.
Well, I think that's what helps it a lot, because WWE is not good with subtlety. We definitely did not get any of that tonight in multiple instances. But so, yeah, weaving the two storylines together is almost like, okay, we get it. We get what you're doing. But because the players are so good, we're kind of okay. We kind of shy away from, you know, too deep of a criticism because, you know, you anticipate the match. So I'm pretty much down for it.
All right. Our opening contest, because we're just going to go through the matches here, just because there wasn't a whole lot of talking on SmackDown, which I greatly appreciate, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our opening match was a six-person tag team match as the Street Profits teamed with Bianca Belair to take on the Dirty Dogs and Bayley, kind of previewing the two expected title matches at Backlash, the one of which is confirmed. We know that Bianca's defending against Bayley at Backlash. After the finish for this match, we can suspect that the Street Profits are going to get their 2-on-2 return match against the Dirty Dogs at Backlash as well, when Montez Ford pins Robert Roode with the Springboard Frog Splash. Is there a prettier frog splash in wrestling right now?
Sasha Banks.
I'm going to stop sending you AJ GIFs.
AJ.
I wish I had my sound effect, but I don't. Yet another reason we are the Sami Zayns of the Chairshot Radio Network. I don't even have my full complement of weapons anymore. What did you think of the six-person tag?
Well, you know, when they meld together, we just talked about it, putting in two storylines together and then just kind of folding them into one another, it doesn't always work out. But I enjoyed this one because the Bayley character would align with Roode and Ziggler. And obviously Bianca and, you know, Street Profits already have an alliance. So it didn't seem forced at all.
That's fair. I think the other thing, too, is we kind of got some unique interaction between everybody as well, specifically Bianca using the hair whip to break up a pin by Roode. Do you think that that's something that she should use as often as she's been using it lately, or is this something that you should keep kind of intermittent in order to keep the specialness of it? It left a hell of a bruise on Sasha's stomach at Mania.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of her repertoire, I guess you could say. So, you know, using it sparingly would be great, because what is that supposed to do? Is it like a finisher? Does it, you know, finish someone off? Does it hurt them so much that they're incapacitated? I would use it sparingly, but again, it's WWE. They do not know moderation. They do not know subtlety, so it is what it is.
I mean, it was the greatest move in WrestleMania history 3 weeks ago, Tony.
In the greatest match in WrestleMania history, yeah, I get it.
All right, let's move forward. We already discussed the Bryan promo. We already discussed the Seth Rollins prediction segment. Are we maintaining our strict no Nia Jax philosophy even when it comes to SmackDown? Because I'm okay with that. There wasn't a whole lot to this tag match, and Natalya and Tamina pick up the win in like 3.5 minutes.
You know what bothers me? Says I have not seen SmackDown in quite some time, with the exception of clips while I'm at the bar or watching it on mute. Why do I feel like every time I jack the run, it's just a copy and paste of what happened the previous week? Am I tripping? Is it some? Am I making that up? Or it feels like nothing is changing on Raw or SmackDown at all.
Yeah, it feels like it's very interchangeable. It's kind of plug and play with the title situation there. And even more so obviously made by tonight's episode of Raw, which we'll get to in a few moments here, is we kind of saw Reggie's involvement on SmackDown as well, but it backfired leading to the finish over on SmackDown. Whereas tonight on Raw, it was successful in stopping the pinfall attempt and allowed Nia and Shayna to retain the titles. Again, we'll talk more Raw here in a little bit. Just wanted to give context to my comment. Aleister Black, vignette number two. Tony, I'm just happy the guy still has a job. I know that sounds mean to say, but he fucking disappeared. So now that you actually had a chance to see one of the vignettes, what do you think of the new character?
I mean, I'm just going to let this one play out. It doesn't bother me one way or the other, whether, you know, he's there or not. So I'm going to give this one. And also, like I said, I'm not really big on the blue brand right now, not by choice at all, because they're killing it. And I really wish I had the time. But, yeah, I wouldn't want to pass judgment on something that I don't fully, you know, I'm not able to capture.
The original promo last week I thought was really good. This one right here I didn't think was quite as good, but it does seem like they're kind of leaning into the more occult version of Aleister Black, similar to what we saw in NXT. Because I don't know if you caught the book or not, but the book that Aleister was holding was Tales of the Dark Father.
Yeah, it's just so hard to get a character like that over. Like, look at the Viking Raiders. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you call them Vikings that raid, and then in the same instance make a joke about being a Cleveland Browns fan? It's funny, it is unexpected, but that diminishes whatever character you're trying to bring to the table. So it becomes a gimmick. You know, like when you look to the, I don't want to say the old days, but when you look back to the character gimmicks, I mean, Boink the Clown was a fucking clown. Like, you know, he was an evil clown, he was a happy clown, but he was a clown. It's really hard to get these things over right now, because what happens is you go deep into this unexplainable void and you end up with Bray Wyatt, who has had like at least three different amazing characters. And every time he tries to give them depth, I feel like WWE just kind of muddles the water so much to the point where you can't follow the thread anymore. And I just predict that that's what they're going to happen. That's what they're going to do with Black.
Hello.
Well, guys, sounds like we lost Harry, however temporarily, hopefully.
Sorry about that. I'm here.
There he is.
Yep, there he is. I didn't realize I muted the microphone. All right. What I was saying was, or what I tried to say was, and apparently nobody heard me because I muted my dumb ass, was religion is something that I think you have to tread really lightly with when it comes to the world of professional wrestling, because it is so easy to scare off a portion of your audience by touching on the subject in general. ECW, we've talked about before on the show here. Do you remember the crucifixion angle with Raven and Sandman in ECW?
Yep.
And the fact that there was such an uproar in the arena that night that they sent Raven back out to apologize for the angle a little bit later on in the evening. And this is the ECW audience we're talking about, who are a bunch of gigantic-ass smart marks.
Yeah, and I mean, the last time God was in a match, it really didn't go over that well either. So I get it.
Well, that's okay, because he got his revenge at WrestleMania this year.
Light revenge.
He held a 15-year grudge. It's over, we think. Maybe. We'll see. But anyways, Like, I like the idea behind the Aleister Black character. I get it. But I'm in the same camp as you are of I'm going to have to wait and see as to how it'll be received by wrestling audiences and whether or not they'll have the ability to go with it. Because if I recall correctly, the reason they kept Aleister off of SmackDown originally is because Fox didn't want the character, despite the fact that they have multiple shows that have dealt with this particular topic in the past. I remind everybody that they have a show about a serial killer on Monday nights as well. Anyways, I think that actually wraps up all we had to talk about from SmackDown, because the vast majority of the late half of the show was dominated by the IC title match and then the heavyweight championship match. I'm quickly scrolling through Thomas Hall's report over on 411, which I highly recommend Thomas's writing if anybody's listening and hasn't given him a chance yet. I don't like the leather grade thing. I've never liked the leather grade thing. Thomas and I have talked about this in the past, but it's his scale. It's his decision. That being said, his reviews are very informative. And for somebody like me who's doing this podcast off of memory, it helps me keep everything together in order to be able to present a full look at the presentation that was Friday Night SmackDown. But that does wrap us up, Thomas. One more thing that I did forget to ask you about. What do you make of Roman Reigns' new music?
I like it. Yeah, I enjoy it.
I do too. I think it works. I think it was time. I think it's been time, but I think it was time. And the music comes off kind of douchebaggian, which I think is the intent.
Douchebaggian, Harry?
Yes, absolutely. I'm making shit up as we go along, Tony.
All right.
But, yeah, I really like the new theme song. I think it fits the character, and I think it was time to step away from the Shield music just because of the fact that the only potential reason I could see to resurrect it is if he gets into a program with Rollins and he does it as, like, an attempted psychological warfare. But otherwise, it was time for him to move on because he's so far removed from the Shield character at this point.
Yep.
Scale of 1 to 10, Tony. What did you give SmackDown?
Well, again, as usual, I don't want to give an unfair grading, but just judging by the final hour, probably a solid 8.
I am a full point higher than you at a 9. In my opinion, this is the best 2 hours of television the WWE has produced so far this year. Top to bottom, it was as consistently booked as I've seen SmackDown in a very long time, and even a four minute Nia and Tamina tag match wasn't enough to take me off of the cloud that I had from the rest of the show. So to tonight's episode of Raw. All right, let's get the elephant out of the room early, Tony. They made it official tonight on Monday Night Raw. Eva Marie is back. The exasperated sigh says it all.
Do you remember when they showed that she was helping, she was being trained by Brian Kendrick? She was in, you know,
yes.
a ring with yellow ropes and going at it, and she had months off, and everybody thought she was going to come back and show some skill, show some growth, show some, you know, really good action. But then she came back, and she sat the bed. It was horrible. It was really, really bad. And then you had that gimmick where she wouldn't wrestle at all, which was annoying as hell, but I get it. That's heel work, and it was cool. But then when it finally had to, you know, call to action, nothing. We got nothing worth watching at all. It was garbage. The only redeemable thing I have ever gotten from Eva Marie was the moment that AJ Lee sat on her chest. Other than that, nothing. If I never saw this woman again in the wrestling ring, I'd be okay. Now, with all that being said, if somehow she miraculously learned how to wrestle, then let's see. But let's not forget what era she comes from, what skill set she needed then versus what skill set she would need now. It's just, you're in a different ballgame, and I don't think she's going to be able to survive. Moreover, the gimmick, however minimal we saw it was, have we not seen this like 8 times already?
I'm going to counterpoint that by saying simply 5 words. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Not a wrestler, manager instead.
You really
think
that's what she's coming back to do?
I don't think she's coming back to be a full-time in-ring wrestler, no. And they kind of teased it in the promo that she did that she's coming back to, quote, give back to others. As ridiculous as the idea of Eva Marie giving anything back to somebody from a wrestling standpoint is, it makes it seem like she's coming back as either a manager or somebody leading a stable, similar to like a Alexandra York and the York Foundation in WCW. And I think that it could work. I would prefer that it be in the women's division in order to give the ladies something to do. But I do think that Eva's decent enough on the microphone to be able to carry that. I have zero interest in seeing her wrestle again. And I say this as somebody who actually enjoyed her program with Bayley and NXT.
Well, let's hope your wishful thinking comes true. They want her
we've
to
gone
wrestle.
Back and we've gone back and forth on the Bayley thing before on this podcast. One of the benefits of having done this now for 7 years. It didn't seem like they were introducing her back to be a wrestler in the way that the promo was worded tonight.
Neither does Liv Morgan in a bathtub. Neither does Carmella doing makeup in front of a mirror.
Neither does
Mandy
Emma doing headshots.
Mandy.
Or Emma taking headshots.
Man.
No, I agree that the concept of the character is completely flawed. 100% behind you on that. But I'm still saying that it didn't come off like she's going to be a wrestler to me. Now, I could be incredibly wrong, and she's going to come back, and she's going to shit the bed again. And then we'll have somebody else that we don't talk about on a weekly basis on Monday Night Raw. But for now, you're going to put this in the wrong regardless. But I feel like this is purgatory.
Well, thankfully you don't do wrong.
I get the easier of the two shows between us. I'm good with that.
I wonder if the girls at home, because they got laid off, watched Raw tonight and thought to themselves, really? All right.
Somewhere Chelsea Green is like, this bitch. It's okay. Chelsea will be back in Impact come Slammiversary and everything will be coach. 2 title matches to discuss tonight, Tony. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Nia and Shayna retain. Yay. 2nd title match to discuss. No. What did you make of... As I attempt to get something to help get my throat from getting all scratchy on me, what did you make of the women's tag team title defense by Nia and Shayna against Lana and Naomi tonight?
Nope.
Give me something here. I'm trying to get a drink, jackass.
Yeah, just did not care. Didn't care last week. Didn't care the week before. No one got hurt. Lana did okay. I do recall a particular mistake, but I don't remember what it is. And I'm not looking for these mistakes. I promise you, I'm not looking. But, yeah, just not interested.
It seemed very choreographed. Did it come off that way to you?
Well, yeah, but not. I mean, when you say that she was a ballerina for some odd years and she's a trained dancer, that almost calls attention to the choreography of the match. That's just how she learns things. But when you bring it up, you're like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Well, but I don't necessarily know that that's a slight at Adnan Virk, though, just because of the fact that A, Virk doesn't really know better than to not call attention to these things, and B, Virk's trying to put over the athletic history of the performer in question here.
I'm definitely not blaming him at all.
Okay, that's fair then. I actually thought Adnan did pretty well tonight compared to his first 2 weeks on Raw. I thought that there was a whole lot less clunkiness in the way that Virk did, except for the opening segment, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But beyond that first segment where they went to commercial like 3 different times, I thought that Virk is starting to settle into the role and honestly kind of comes off as, while not as good at calling wrestling, almost comes off as kind of Mauro Light in terms of the pop culture references, does he not?
Well, it's definitely not as excessive. And I do think he tries to
Agreed.
Get some in there. So it's not bad. I don't know. I've never had an issue with him. In fact, I think tonight the only thing I didn't like was you can tell that he's trying to get certain things over in the way that WWE does. When Braun left the ring to go 2-2 around it, he screamed like almost bloody murder, like Joey Styles, get off the tracks. And you could just tell that that's what they're trying to get over. Like, it's just like, so it's just blatant, pandering. It's just, I've never enjoyed that though. So it's not his fault.
I mean, to be fair, we also don't enjoy most things Braun on this podcast either.
I want to know whose idea it was to play the train sound. And
oh, that
was
100% Vince. That was 100% Vince. I am sold on that.
And then, I mean, you don't see things like that, like Retribution, Raw Underground, the train sound. You don't see people try shit out and see how it works on a program that's been around for so long and, you know, has been in primetime TV for so long. It's just so weird sometimes.
Speaking of which, where were Mason T-Bar tonight? Did they suddenly not care since Drew didn't have a match?
Maybe they lost their face paint.
Possibly. Or they were maces that T-barred.
Oh,
as opposed to Vikings that, never mind. I will say that segment with Riddle backstage did make me laugh a couple of times. Liz would be yelling about it, but I actually enjoyed the bit with Riddle and the Viking Raiders backstage. Especially Riddle's response to Eric saying he's a Browns fan with, I did not see that coming. The
yeah.
whole zip it, the whole lock key zip thing with Riddle and Orton makes me laugh every time, too. Just because of the deadpan way that Orton plays it off.
Well, yeah, I mentioned in the Raw report that a part of the reason why the Riddle character works with Orton is he now has a soundboard to accentuate how ridiculous he's being. Whereas before Orton, we're supposed to accept that this is real. Now we can relate to Randy by simply saying, yeah, dude, shut the fuck up. It's a very small thing, but it's very important sometimes with characters as outlandish as Riddle.
All right, the other title match on tonight's episode of Raw was the Raw Tag Team titles that opened the show as AJ Styles and Omos returned from their vacation, injury, to defend against Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. I don't know who was injured. I just remember reading that one of them was not medically cleared after WrestleMania, and that's all that I knew. But we finally got them back in the ring tonight after approximately a month. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, first, their interaction with the New Day before the match, and then the match itself. I thought the interactions between the two teams came off pretty forced to me, but I did really dig New Day's Mortal Kombat-inspired gear tonight.
I mean, they've been wearing it for like 2 months. It makes me wonder how many they have, because if they don't have a lot, they're not changing. I mean, I hope they're watching those. The one,
how am
I guess,
just
redeeming,
now noticing it.
Yeah, it's been that way. Yeah, they've both been wearing the same thing for about 2 months. Maybe 2 months is an exaggeration, but it feels like a very long time. Well, no, so when you watch the match, I mean, they got their asses kicked, Kofi and Woods. And if there's one positive thing to say about that, it's simply that they appear to be fully on board with Omos and AJ. So if we don't like the decision or if we feel like it was nonsensical, which I did, I know you didn't, but I did, at the very least, they're committed.
Which is fair. It's rare that they take the opportunity to get behind a just debuting talent like Omos. How do I put this? Just me, or does he kind of come off Kali-ian? That's a thing, right?
I get what you're saying, And the answer, I think, is yes. He's not that good. He's big. You know, he's fucking huge. He's lumbering. He's still
super green.
Just as a rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as a rookie in general. But the good news is he tries to – it looks like he's so trying so hard to protect his opponent. And Kali never looked like that. At one point he gave, I believe Kofi a backbreaker, and you can totally tell he was cradling it because he just was afraid that he was going to hurt Kofi. And, you know, Kofi's going to sell like a motherfucker, so it's hard to decipher whether you're really killing Kofi or he's really looking like he's being killed. But you notice off of the backbreaker, he softened the blow and then tossed Kofi, which alone looks vicious. So I got to give him credit for protecting his opponent.
Yeah, he did the same thing to Woods as well. There was a little bit more contact on the one with Woods, but I think a lot of the one with Kofi is it just me or did it kind of look like he almost lost his grip with Kofi at first too?
Yeah, a little bit, and he wanted to make sure that, you know, he re-caught him, and he hardly touched him with the knee. But, I mean, the throw afterwards telegraphed that to where it still looked vicious. And, again, not to make us sound like the experts, but I doubt anybody else is going to notice, so it's fine. But, yeah, super green. I mean, but if you're to learn with anyone, you know, you got AJ Styles right there.
Yeah. How did Big Show put it? That being aligned with The Undertaker was like sitting underneath the learning tree every single week. I think that's similar for Omos to Styles. I mean, a completely different style of matches, obviously. AJ Styles is 5'10" and 175, 180 pounds. You can call him 200 pounds all you want to. That motherfucker ain't 200 pounds. And Omos is like 7'4" and like 350. But the learning tree experiences that Omos is going to get working with AJ Styles is going to do nothing but help him in the long run if he's able to apply what Styles is trying to teach him.
Yeah.
Is it just me or were there a lot of MVP promos tonight?
There was. They're doing this weird thing with MVP where they just kind of want him to talk a lot. And you notice even the camera work in one of the backstage ones was kind of more handheld than usual. And MVP was talking directly into it. I don't know if that was a stylistic choice or just a really shitty directing, but I noticed it, and it came off as not a promo, but as MVP kind of fed up, and he's just going to say his piece. So again, if it was a directorial choice, then you might be on to something, but it's hard to say considering the company.
You know what I think the end game for this should be? I enjoy MVP with Lashley. I think MVP has done a phenomenal job of molding Lashley into a legitimized main event commodity. But I think that there's more that MVP could be doing than just working solely with Lashley. We kind of talked about the dynamic between Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville last week. We saw more fracturing of that relationship tonight on Raw, teasing kind of that Sonya's going into business for herself with the Charlotte situation and then in other regards as well, and Pierce has just finally had enough of it. How would you feel about MVP as the general manager for Monday Night Raw?
I think that he's too much of a character for the GM role. I don't ever want a role like that where they are bigger than the talent that they run. And I don't think that the character would be fair and balanced. And why would we expect him to? You know, he's MVP. So, yeah, I don't think that'll work for me. I think he's got the charisma for it for sure, but it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I'm an AJ Lee fan, and I didn't necessarily like that particular role that she did. I don't know what that was. To be honest, was it a gift? Did she get a raise? Like, it's such a weird time. But it got more AJ on my screen, so I wasn't too annoyed.
I feel like Tony just Randy Jackson to me. That's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
All right. So we just mentioned Charlotte. Her match is up next here as we go start to finish on Raw now that we've covered the two title matches. She takes on Dana Brooke tonight, and to quote a very wise man from the report, "Oh, Dana, bless her heart. Her efforts are apparent, but the skill just doesn't match, not even in the slightest." post-match, easy for me to say, Charlotte holds on to the figure eight after the bell until Mandy Rose breaks it up with a drop kick that landed square in the rib cage. That looked like it fucking hurt. Then Charlotte gets added to the women's championship match at Backlash. It's now we get a three-way between Asuka, Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte Flair. I won't deny that Charlotte's involvement makes the match feel like a bigger deal. I don't think it's necessary, though.
I mean, it's not. It's not at all. It's not necessarily in the slightest. And it seems so shoehorned, and the story getting there was really bad. I think I mentioned in the Raw report at the very end, basically, that when they have a match in place already in their mind, they usually do a couple of things that just all of them are equally annoying. Either A, they convolute the story just to get to the point that we already knew we were getting to, such as Charlotte with the suspension and the fine, and now Sonya's, you know, equal footing to Adam Pearce for some reason on Raw. And if they don't do that, they drag a storyline on forever, like Braun versus Drew versus Lashley. And that's really just what they keep doing. So with Charlotte, there's no character development. She's always been this way. It's not new. If anything, she's more verbal, but it just comes off as like a really bad character. And not bad in the sense that they think we think it's bad.
It comes off very entitled, which is a lot of people's real feelings about her, so not necessarily something that people are going to gravitate against as a character.
Look, if she feels entitled, it's great. What they're doing is they're blurring the real feelings of fans in with the fake character of Charlotte. And you can't be tongue-in-cheek, you can't break down the fourth wall unless you're good at it, and they're not. So it becomes this blurred version of both stories, and it just comes off as like, what's the real goal here? And then you got Asuka. We don't even know who Asuka is anymore. She's not the Empress of Tomorrow. She's not the badass, vicious Asuka. She's just someone that shouts loudly in Japanese and says that we're not ready.
Well, most of her shouting tonight was in English.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disagree. I do think that the Asuka character is kind of taken a backseat, specifically as they try to develop further talent on both Raw and on SmackDown when Asuka was over there. And it's come at the expense of the mystique that Asuka once carried, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, they tried to make her like a friend of the girls. They tried to make her one. Like, she was in a six-man last week, wasn't she? Why? Why would she care?
I mean, I guess the trip to the pay window is a trip to the pay window. If you want to look at it from the purely kayfabe perspective of, as Dusty used to say, it, winners get paid more.
Mm-hmm.
No, I get that there's a ridiculousness to it, and I agree, because of the fact that the character has been more or less mishandled ever since the first loss at WrestleMania to Charlotte. But I do think that there's still potential. We've talked about it many times on the show where we see like flashes and spurts of the brilliance that was the Asuka character, but now being put into a situation where she's having to come through with her personality. And Asuka was never meant to come through with her personality. Asuka was meant to go into the ring and rip bitches apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. And now I don't see it.
I don't think that you necessarily need entertainment in your sports sometimes with some of these performers.
Nope.
Look at a guy like Lashley. Lashley should be barely talking. Just going into the ring and just trucking motherfuckers. Asuka should be going into the ring and just trucking people. You don't need to try to put a sports entertainment spin on them in order to connect them with the audience, because there is a portion of your audience that's going to connect with that ass kicker.
Some people don't even want to connect. They just want to see someone get their ass beat.
Do you think we eventually see Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville made GMs of their respective shows?
Well, to the point,
I mean,
do you care?
No. Adam Pearce has only just shown up consistently, and he has shown only that he has zero control. He comes off as weak, manipulable, and doesn't have a bearing at all. And all it takes is Shane McMahon showing up. I mean, look at tonight. So you can come in and just make shit happen. I don't see him as any type of producer or leader or whatever that they want to portray him as. Because he was shoehorned in there. Like, randomly,
so
he's talking to the guys in the back on SmackDown, and now he's, like, you know, the person that just makes the decisions. There wasn't an announcement. Not that there needed to be one. This is just what they do. It's what they do. Let's just make that happen. Okay, cool.
So what you're saying is the one character trait that Adam Pearce has run his hat is incompetence, and that's not necessarily a way to build.
It's dumb. It's because for whatever reason, they feel the need to make all the wrestlers so anti-authority, because it worked with one bald Texan like some odd years ago.
So it appears that you missed part of the Morrison versus Damian Priest match?
I did.
Yeah, I could tell by the way the report is formatted here. What ended up happening is Priest caught the win with Hit the Lights. Priest went to roll up Morrison off of the ropes. Morrison countered into a roll-up of his own, but Miz jumped up onto the apron thinking that Morrison was about to get rolled up, which distracted the referee, which kind of protects Morrison in the long run here. I do think we're slow burning to a breakup of the dirt sheet, and I know you've been calling for that for a while. And while I enjoy these guys as a team as far as their in-ring work, and I do think that their stuff, the music stuff, has been entertaining at the very least, I think it's time for both to move past the almost amateurish, childish ways of the dirt sheet and into becoming formidable on their own participants again.
Oh, I think that they have sucked ever since Morrison's come back.
Well, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. Every promo, every segment, every music video, just not entertaining in the least. And I know that they're supposed to be coming off as Hollywood douchebags, and Miz does a pretty good job at that. Nah, just not. Don't need it. Don't want it.
We're going to agree to disagree on this one because I, by and large, have enjoyed the music video stuff there. And I do think that they did a really good job with Priest and Bunny. And we talked about how good the match at WrestleMania was, and a lot of that goes to Morrison and Miz. We've never questioned their credibility inside of the ring. It's just you're over the sports entertainment aspect of it, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really bad. It's the whole show. It's not just them. It's just like... just not. The characters aren't well-rounded. They're not. The only people that you really connect with or refuse to connect with are the ones that have been there for a long time, because at the very least you have some semblance of familiarity with them. I think Harry pressed mute again.
God damn it, this phone. I assure you, I did not press the mute button. The phone pressed the mute button on me. Because I was actually asking a question. And the question,
well, what's
the question that I was, the question that I was asking was, well, I'll get to that. Was Cedric and Shelton finally broke up? Do you care?
Okay. I know there's a lot of negativity on this, and it's weird for me to not be so negative about something, but as a team, they're just not coming off as good. We've seen them lose the last couple of weeks. I've been very upset about them losing because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But realistically, they weren't going to do anything as a team. They weren't going to win a title. They weren't going to go any for it. So they were just placeholders. Cedric's promo Well, let me preface this first by saying they never should have broken up the Hurt Business. I feel like there's no reason to do that. Lashley could have still done everything on his own, still been a badass, but had two people on his side that were also badasses. Not every person who has friends or a stable needs those people to get involved. In fact, it's almost more impressive if they don't. If Lashley did everything that he's been doing while still being donned by Cedric and Shelton in suits, that's a badass. That's a badass stable because they all could beat your ass. But, of course, we are where we are. So the one thing that I sat down and said, whoa, was Shelton's promo for a couple of reasons. Shelton's not known for his promo skills, okay? This was great. This was really good. And it was, like, impactful. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the end was a punch in the throat. And it was such a good, from his character standpoint, it was such a good promo. I have seen young people come into this company and fizzle out like nothing. But me, I'm a survivor, and I'm still here. I haven't left. I'm not going anywhere. You won't last long. I'm still going to be here when you leave. Just because someone thinks that I'm not at the top of the card or that I'm not where I should be or whatever, the fact is, I'm still here. And then he knocks his chest and says he didn't want to take the hits with me. Like, I don't know, just everything was so good about that promo. And I think it got lost in the anger that they were breaking up because I didn't see one person mention it in the comments now or while I was reporting it. But holy shit, that was so good in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Shelton shows potential in terms of still being able to bring it from a veteran perspective here, but I think this is going to come off more as the maturation of Cedric Alexander off of his breakup. I think that they're going to use Shelton's veteran status in order to help elevate Cedric, hopefully, because Cedric has been putting in the work for these last couple of months here and seemingly doesn't really have a whole lot to show for it, and this is an opportunity to give Cedric something to sink his teeth into by having an opportunity to feud with somebody that I would imagine he kind of looks up to as kind of a path blazer for people like himself and Shelton Benjamin. Because Shelton's not the biggest guy in the world. Shelton and Cedric are probably about the same size. Shelton's probably a little bit heavier just because of, like, the amateur wrestling background and everything that Shelton has. But I would assume that they're probably about the same size in terms of height and weight here. So show that you don't have to be a super heavyweight to a guy like Cedric Alexander, and you can still make your mark amongst the main roster in the WWE.
Yeah, anyone that's upset needs to ask themselves this question. Are you more interested in Shelton and Cedric as a tag team that's never going to win their belts again? Or are you more interested in a program between two solid-ass wrestlers who, at the very least, respect each other enough to put their all into it?
You got really muffled there, Tony, just as a heads up.
People are just asking, like, you know, these schools are going to put everything into it because of who they are and because they've been friends for this entire time. So chances are they're going to put a lot of effort into making this program work, more so than they would in a tag team that was never going to get any type of, you know, real support from the higher up.
Yeah, I think we've basically seen the ceiling of what they can do as a tag team with their run with the tag team titles while they were involved with the Hurt Business. Now that they don't have MVP talking for them anymore, it's kind of up to them to stand on their own, and trying to do that in a tag team gimmick in a tag team division that, let's be honest, is sparsely cared about to begin with, just wasn't going to work out. I do think that there is a better opportunity for them feuding with each other than there would be still teaming. That being said, it's just sad to see the wasted potential of what could have been with regards to the Hurt Business.
Yeah, it really sucks.
All right, we move forward. You mentioned the lack of subtlety in the WWE. I'm assuming that this match specifically is what you were referring to. It is Drew Gulak versus Angel Garza. And a rose is just a rose, unless it's a rosebud, not the kind you're thinking of.
I feel so bad for Drew Gulak.
Not to say that he didn't agree to this or that he didn't think it was a big deal, but there is no reason for this. In fact, watching the match, I thought to myself, man, good shit, Drew. You're putting in the work to make sure Angel looks like a beast. It looks like they're giving some energy to Angel Garza again, and they want to give him a little bit of a push. Okay, cool. I'm all for it. Let's fucking see what happens. And then he grabs a rose and puts it down the trunk of Drew Gulak and does a running start punt up the asshole of Drew.
I'm not laughing at the writing. I'm laughing at the disdain in your voice as you discuss it.
What the fuck? It was like, everything worked out just fine. It wasn't anything like groundbreaking. It was like, okay, I'm on board for this. Why the fuck not? Let's give Angel some. And even the match, he took his pants off immediately, threw him at Drew. He was not dealing with anyone's bullshit today. He was going to fuck this guy up. And then he does. And to drive the point home, he
turns himself into a comedy act. Subtleties,
not
my
even,
name is creative.
Not even Outcast liked that move. Like,
I'm proud of myself for getting that reference.
I'm proud of you too.
We're going to move on, but I just wanted to say I actually knew what you meant with that, and I appreciate it. And I'm sure there are other people listening that'll get it as well. And if you don't, Google. Matt Riddle teams with Randy Orton to take on Elias and Jackson Riker. Waiting for the handicap match comment. Oh, you actually did it in the report. Never mind.
Read the final move. Read the ending of the match.
Riddle to the top. RKO from Randy Orton to John Cena. Floating bro, cover for 1, 2, 3. Brapadoo! Boop, boop, boop! Really, really wish I had my sound effects, Tony. Because I guarantee you I would have hit you with, and his name is John Cena! Anyways, so they've been kind of building up Styles and Omos as this dominant force here. Do you think it's a super team like Orton and Riddle that are being set up to be the ones to take the titles off of Styles and Omos? Because it seems like we're starting to see more cohesion in the ring between Orton and Riddle. And I have to say, I think the backstage segments have been entertaining.
Yeah, I just think that they think it's funny. I don't know. I don't disagree. I enjoy it. Like I said, Riddle needs that soundboard so that he comes off as funny. Because if he's lame, you know, you got Orton being like, bro, shut up. Which is basically what we want to say. So you click. It clicks. It's probably one of the best things they could have done with him.
All right. Sheamus has a U.S. title, non-title open challenge here, and he takes on Mansoor, who has just signed his contract with Monday Night Raw. Because apparently they ran out of shit for him to do on 205 Live. Good for him.
It's really interesting that most Raw contracts are one page and only need one signature.
And yet almost every single match contract is like 3 or 4 fucking pages and requires 2 lawyers and a partridge and a pear tree.
Yeah.
And usually somebody going... And usually somebody going through a table. What did you make of
Sheamus? I feel like that's
Mansoor?
In the
actually,
contract.
Absolutely. It's contractually. Oh, my God. It is now the contractually obligated table spot, Tony.
Yeah.
Can we make that a thing going forward? Oh, see, now, if the chair shot does T-shirts, which I think they do, that should be a T-shirt. Contractually obligated table spot. Anyways. How do you think Mansoor handled himself in his first major match on Monday Night Raw?
He did well. Sheamus let him do well. Sheamus allowed that offense, and it came off really, really well.
In the end, we see Humberto Carrillo trying to get revenge for a backstage attack by Sheamus earlier on in the show, which ends with Humberto Carrillo getting brogue kicked.
and then Mansoor getting broke kicked. Kind of hard to take either of them seriously when Sheamus single-handedly laid them both out, isn't it?
Well, I mean, were you planning on taking Humberto Carrillo seriously?
I think that there was potential to take him seriously, especially when he came in House of Fire on Sheamus while Sheamus was setting up for the Brogue on Mansoor originally. But they seem very start and stoppy with Carrillo, and it's kind of deflating to somebody that actually appreciates what the kid's capable of.
Yeah, this is a holding pattern until you get to the real, you know, person, whoever that may be.
I'm saying it's Sheamus and Carrillo for the U.S. title at Backlash. I don't think Carrillo should win. I don't think Carrillo should be anywhere near the U.S. title. But I do think that those two could have a very good match against each other with the title on the line as a potential mid-card matchup.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's most likely what's going to happen. But still a placeholder. Still, you know, just a means to an end to get to whoever it is that they're trying to give Sheamus next.
I'm about to say a word that I never thought I would say about an Alexa Bliss segment, Tony. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Meh. Turning her into Bray Wyatt light doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Alexa is more than capable of handling things on her own, that turning her into almost a caricature of what you wanted the Fiend Bray Wyatt character to be is doing Alexa and, by proxy, the rest of the women's division a disservice.
I don't really know where they go with this. It sounds like someone's going to get attacked, or it did get attacked, or we're going to get a video of someone kidnapped, tied up to a chair. I try to think, like, which woman wasn't there tonight, but
I can't think of anybody that I really care about anyway. So, you know, like,
maybe she's kidnapped Nikki Cross. It would explain her being off television.
That probably is it, actually. Can't think of anybody else. But then you're getting more of the same.
No, I agree. Because it's a character that it's a feud that we've already seen before. With the characterizations of Alexa that are turned up from what we've previously seen before, but no new merit added to the conversation in the process.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we already discussed the women's tag team title match, which takes us to the main event as Braun Strowman challenges Lashley. Braun Strowman now has trained Pyro because, of course, he fucking does. The train sound effect needs to go away. That being said, I thought the finish was well handled. It protected Braun. It made Lashley look like a monster. And in the process, you got to see McIntyre stand tall at the end of the show as well. What did you make of the match, and how do you think the finish came off?
I thought the match was great. I feel like these fools really beat each other's asses, and that's just awesome. They go at it. And how rare is it to see Braun Strowman look like, you know, he can be manhandled? I enjoyed that aspect of it because Lashley's the champion and because Braun never looks this way. So you kind of – I was okay with it. I don't like the Braun character. I don't like his invincibility. I don't like that he can lift semis and ambulances. And I don't like the way he cuts promos. I think he doesn't make any sense. The only good thing I could say is he's consistent with not making any sense. And, yeah, he's just his everything. He's really done a lot of – well, not him. The writing and the character has done a lot of damage to what Braun Strowman is. But this match really kind of let me know that he still wants it. He still very much has the talent to have it. And I think it's going to be a good triple threat. So I was fine with it.
You seem a little off-put by the way we went off the air, though, with McIntyre laying out both Strowman and Lashley.
No, not really. I mean, you want to keep the mystique of who's going to win, and this is just Wrestling 101. So, like, it wasn't too big of a deal for me. I didn't mind it.
I questioned Drew's attacks after the match, as it seems somewhat out of character for him.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue that I had, was mainly, like, again, it's the whole heel-face divide that's been kind of blurred. I don't mind shades of gray. It just, it has to be consistent. Drew is constantly harping about fairness and how he climbed to the top and he'll climb as fast or as much as he needs to. So seeing him like kind of cheap shot both of his competitors just doesn't seem very McIntyre.
I was waiting for you to say McIntyrean, then I would have felt better about mine earlier in the show.
No.
Yeah, but of course, leave it to the English guy to make me feel like an asshole. Appreciate you, Tony.
Well, it's very Ducharian of you, apparently.
That's how we go off the air for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, and that wraps us up for these two particular episodes of WWE TV. I kind of want to talk NXT on the show going forward just because of me doing the R's for it, but I feel like we already have enough that we have to cover in these hour and a half that I like to try to keep the show maxed out at. So if you want to hear my thoughts on SmackDown or on NXT, make sure you check out the three R's over on 411mania.com/wrestling.
Yes.
Final reaction time, Tony. Favorite match or moment from the week?
I enjoyed the main event of Raw. I thought that Braun and Lashley did a really good job, and like I said, you made Braun look vulnerable, which is something you kind of need sometimes. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
I'm going to go with the main event of SmackDown, just because of what I said earlier. In my opinion, it is the best match I've seen so far in 2021. Better than the triple threat at Mania was, in my opinion, as well. And better than Sasha and Bianca, just to piss Tony off a little bit, because I'm sure it will. Least favorite match or moment from this week, the Greg Watchery.
Eva Marie.
That's not fair. She hasn't even debuted yet.
Eva Marie.
Bitter AF.
I gave her a chance. They asked me to give her a chance, and I did.
Like 3 years ago.
She didn't get better. She was trained by Brian Kendrick. She didn't get better.
Tony's not letting this one go, folks. It's going to be a long couple of months around here. Okay, so let me ask you this. Will your bitching about Eva Marie replace your bitching about Nia?
No.
So you're going to bitch about both of them equally? Noted.
We'll see.
Or I guess proportionately, depending on who deserves it more on any given week. I'm going to go with the Drew Gulak thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Subtlety, thy name is creative. I hope whatever you're making, Drew, it's worth it. Overall show rating for Monday Night Raw, Tony?
6 out of 10.
Which is actually a step up from the last couple of weeks. You didn't really get to watch. You didn't really get to watch last week's Raw. You did get a chance to watch it in afterwards, after the fact, but you didn't like report on it like you would normally do due to the fact that you got called into work last week. So, but 6 does seem like a little bit of an advance over what you've given a couple of the most recent post-WrestleMania Raws. See, I think the problem is potential's a bitch. Because there is so much potential on the Monday Night Raw roster, just like there's so much potential on the Friday Night SmackDown roster. It's the execution of said potential that I think gets wasted a lot of times, especially when it comes to Raw. And I would say a lot of that has to do with the fact that Raw has that extra hour to fill still, like we've talked about many times before on the show. I gave tonight's Raw a 6.5. I, by and large, enjoyed most of the show. Lashley and Braun, I'm not going to lie, I kind of tuned out a little bit during. I was watching it, but I wasn't really paying attention. But that has more to do with my disinterest with Braun than anything else. My attention perked up once McIntyre came to ringside, but the first half of the match didn't mean much of anything to me. And that's another common cliche that we find on these episodes of Raw that we've talked about in the past as well, of anything before the commercial break really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your MVP for the week, Tony?
Daniel Bryan.
You give it to Bryan, I'll give it to Roman, and then we'll throw a half vote out each for Paul Heyman as well.
All right.
We'll vote for Heyman and Liz's absentia.
For sure.
Unfortunately, I believe the co-hostess with the most assists found her way to bed during the course of Monday Night Raw and ended up needing to nap. She's had a rough couple of days. Hopefully she's back with us next week.
Yep.
All right, where can people find you, Tony?
411mania.com.
Mm-hmm. And
Twitter, Tony411.
House operation website coming along?
You'll know when I let you know.
Which is a code for it's not. ATB the Eagle, pretty much everywhere social media related, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, MySpace. Yes, still exists. Don't use it, but it's still out there. Grapple, which is an app that you can use to rate professional wrestling. Recommend that. I'm actually getting ready to watch their two return shows for Cleveland's own Absolute Intense Wrestling over the next couple of days, and I will be putting my ratings up for those exclusively on Grapple. So make sure you guys check that out there. As Tony said, the 3 R's, my debut version of it, is now available on 411mania.com/wrestling in the columns section. I believe it is also currently a featured article on the website as well. So you can check that out over at 411mania. And this week on Thursday, myself, Eric Watkins, Jason Teasley, and Kennedy Eddings record our NFL draft review episode of The Kickoff for the W2M Network. That'll be this Thursday, probably released late Thursday night, early Friday morning, depending on what time we finish recording. You have been listening to The Reaction, a presentation of the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week here on the ChairShot Radio Network.
Deuces, bitches.
We out. I got to be Tony last week. That was fun. I can't do it as well as he does. I wonder if – I think Liz said Tony the graph, the gift that she shared with me. It's pretty funny. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week. Preview time for Backlash as well next week here on The Reaction. And hopefully the Sami Zayn to the Chair Shot will return to thechairshot.com. Later, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.